The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's January 10th, 2022. Happy New Year again. I know I said that last week, but anyway, welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. Fran is not working today, and she is able to join us.
Well, I'm not
so,
seeing patients today.
Well, you're not seeing patients today, right?
All right, because I was seeing patients last week.
You were, but
yes, right.
Anyway, so if you would like to comment, Fran can respond back to you. So please feel free to comment below, and we would love to hear from you. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, comments below. And if not, you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. We are recording our shows now on Mondays using Facebook Live and then playing them at our normal times on Wednesday at WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. You can also listen to past episodes on iTunes, Spotify, and WHUS.org, or even your favorite podcast outlet. So, Ron's rant of the week. Here we go. So, I got this video from my friend Bruce. Shout out to my friend Bruce, who is wintering in right now. I don't think he's on his bike too much unless he's goofing off or maybe he's riding the rollers. He likes to ride the rollers. Anyway, good morning, Robert. So, it showed this terrible, you know, guy's riding his bike down the road. Car makes the decision to make a turn, wrong time, really bad, kaboom, thing, cyclist goes flying. Fortunately, the driver of the car stopped, and anyway. So, I want to rant on this because more than half of the drivers, and I would say this is probably well more than half of the drivers, don't look for cyclists and pedestrians before turning, and that's from a study that came out. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that within the show, and we're also going to talk about the importance of being predictable, and I'll get into that once again a little bit more into the show. We'll get to that right away. So positive side, bump in the road, eight months. Yay, it's 8 months for any.
Wow.
8 months. Yeah. Well, as of the 11th, it'll be 8 months since the surgery. So very, very cool. Feel great. I just started my extreme spin class up at the community center. Extreme spin, for those of you who are unaware of what that is, it is an hour and a half long indoor cycling class. And my spin classes tend to be very indoor cycling oriented or cycling oriented. So a lot different than what you would normally experience when going to a spin class at a local gym. So one thing to be sure, if you are interested in trying out a spin class or getting involved in it and you're reluctant because you are a cyclist and you go, well, I can't get anything out of that because, you know, it's not really going to work for me. Hey, Ed, how you doing? I remember you. So anyway, Ed is watching right now. Ed Torres. A blast from the past. Very nice. So, anyway, you should try to interview the instructor and find out what the instructor is into and what you may find. Fran and I used to go to a place down in New Jersey, and the person who was teaching a class, she was great. She rode her bike outside when she wasn't teaching indoors. So she had a little bit more of an idea on how to deliver the workout to you as a workout. So anyway, on my extreme spin though is an hour and a half long workout on we use spin bikes. We use a fairly nice spin bike, so it's got wattage output and it's got cadence and it's got your heart rate tied into it if you're wearing a monitor that connects to it, which is really nice. So it's pretty cool. But yep, Extreme Spin has begun. It's an 11-week program with me. And what I do is I try to bring people gradually up to the level of what they're going to be dealing with when they get outdoors. So I do get a lot of outdoor cyclists on this particular class, which is a lot of fun. So anyway, that's positive. It's good. Maintenance minute. Okay, here you go. Have you got a fat bike? Fat tire bike? You know, the ones with the big fat tires? We don't have them. Fran and I don't have them. But what we did have most recently is we had a, we had the delivery of a foot of snow a couple of days ago. So lots of snow on the ground right now. And if you are still, you know, tried and true, married to riding your bicycle and not going out and playing in the snow with snow toys like, you know, skis and snowshoes and things like that, some people like to ride their bicycles in the snow. Well, it's a real challenge if your tires are real skinny, so it makes it a lot more difficult. But fat tire bikes are kind of fun because they're big and fat and wide tires, and they can kind of sit on top of the snow, which is great. You run the pressure super low on the tires and off you go. So my maintenance minute is 10 things you need to know about before biking in the snow. Okay, so we got a few things here we can go over. Why in the world would you ride one? Because it's fun. It's also a great way to start out. It's fat tire bikes are, every single person I have seen, including myself, when they get on their first fat tire bike and take it for a ride, all they have is this gigantic grin on their face because it's just kind of a goofy, fun thing to do. So it's fun. So you wanna pick the bike that works best for you. I would be really cautious of the department store style bikes because they're generally disposable. So you want to try to find something that's a little bit, maybe tough on your budget, but at the same time, it's something you're going to have for a long time. So it's pretty cool. So you want to pick out the right bike and stay away from the department stores. And your local bike shop is always your best bet when you're there. Big advocate of the local bike shop. If you guys haven't figured that out yet, I like to support them. Okay, the application, traditionally fat bikes, they're also known as fatties or fat tire bikes. They're handle a little bit differently than other mountain bikes. They make them sometimes fun, sometimes weird, but they're fun. They're just different. A little bit lower standover heights, a little bit different as to how you're going to apply yourself to them. I would probably buy it with the idea that I wasn't planning on going super fast on the bike. So I'm not looking for efficiency on this bike. I'm looking for just practical, fun position on the bike. So that's what you do. Weather. So you can get outside in some pretty cold weather. And the fat tire bike, once again, I would probably not be putting a clipless pedal on this bike. I'd probably put a very nice, big, fat, stable, flat pedal on the bike. And then you can ride, and I talked about this last week in riding in cold weather, you can ride with a pair of hiking boots on and, you know, some little bit thicker, heavier socks on the inside, some wool socks, whatever works for you. So definitely keep your feet a little bit warmer so you can go out and do that. And you can walk around a little bit too if you want. So you wanna do that. Your clothing is going to be very similar to any other winter clothing that you're going to be wearing out there. You want to protect yourself from the cold. We're going to have a wonderful day tomorrow that won't even get out of the teens here in Connecticut. And they're talking about winds coming out of the northwest, which will bring us down below zero wind chill. Yay! Not my favorite day to be outside, hence spin classes, indoor cycling classes. That's what I do. But, you know, for those who want to go out and tough it up and go out and still get a few pedal strokes in, fat tires are a great way to do it. Fluids. Yeah, you still want to do fluids, even though it's cold outside. And it says here, it's often more important in the winter than in the summer, especially if you ride at high altitude. Well, we don't have any high altitude here in Connecticut, but there are other places. That's not altitude.
How about Union?
No, that's not altitude. No. Altitude is, you know, you got to get over like, you know, 5,000 feet. You got to get over tree line, basically. I mean, I guess you can get over tree line in New England without going to 5,000 feet, but that's still not altitude. Until failure get to 5,000, 6,000 feet, I don't think you experience the same lack of oxygen that you do when you get up to that level. So you want to just make sure that you are hydrating yourself properly. It's really, really important. You're wearing things like ski goggles when you're riding is not a bad idea. Wearing face protection is a great idea. Now we wear masks all the time. So, hey, there you go. That's perfect, right? You can use it as kind of a bonus in these days of COVID. So anyway, hydration is certainly good. Clothing is certainly good. We want to pay attention to both of those. I also, as far as the hydration goes, really, really quick little tip here too. I mention this in almost every indoor cycling class that I teach, and don't forget to hydrate because we're now indoors a lot more and we're in artificial heat, and that artificial heat tends to be very, very dry, and that dry heat can dehydrate you really easily. So don't forget to drink this time of year. A lot of people do. They forget, and then I've seen people run into problems with cramps because they're not hydrated enough, and there's just a lot of complications. You know, footwear, I mentioned that already. Not as big on a cycling shoe in the cold, snowy weather as I am just a good pair of hiking boots. And tires, you know, you're going to run these fat tires. They run 8 to 10 PSI. That's it. You're probably not going to put much more air in those tires than that. And so they're going to be really squishy, but they also really grab well and they squash out well on the snow. So you can ride through some amazing snow with them. They're kind of cool. And if you get really, really lucky, you might find a place that allows snowmobiles. And if you can find a place that allows snowmobiles, you're going to be flying on the trails because they pack down that snow just enough. And you don't even have to carve out new trails. You can just follow wherever they go. So that's a lot of fun. So there's your fat tire tips if you want to go fat tire mountain biking in the snow. It can be a lot of fun. And again, you're not looking at it for speed. You are looking at it for having fun. And having fun is what life is all about, is it not? Hi, Chris. Hi, Eric. How are you? Welcome to the Bicycle Talk show. So anyway, that gets me on to content. So we're going to go back here just for a moment. And I just want to go over something that I mentioned in the beginning of the show on my rant, and that was about that drivers just don't really see they don't see you when you're out riding your bicycle. So this study went back to August 9th of 2018, and it was the University of Toronto in Canada. And it mentioned that more than half of the drivers don't look at cyclists and pedestrians before turning right. No kidding. The old right-hand turn into the cyclist trick. How many times has it happened to you? I've lost count because I ran out of fingers. So it's happened to me a lot. It's not uncommon at all. And if you are skilled and talented, you go with the turn and then you tap on the side of the car and go, hello, did you forget about me? But anyway, one thing to understand is that, and I think this is probably the most important thing, people who are driving cars and trucks, people who are driving any kind of motorized vehicle, have no concept about how fast you are going, whether you're going 10 miles an hour or whether you're going 25 miles an hour on your bicycle. They really don't have a concept of that speed because they're probably not familiar with cycling and even with being a pedestrian in some cases. So they just don't know how fast you're going, and therefore they tend to crash into you because of that. So Toronto has had a number of problems with fatalities, and there's a lot of factors involved here. There's visual and mental demands on drivers at intersections, especially in dense urban environments. So drivers need to divide their attention in several directions, whether it's other vehicles, pedestrians, road signs, traffic signals. Traffic safety instantly becomes a major concern. Let's throw into the mix the stupid phone, which should not be used while driving your car, but unfortunately it's used probably more often than it ever has been. So you have to take into account that drivers are generally not going to see you because they're not looking for you. They're looking for another car. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for something that could damage them when they're driving down the road. And what they see that would damage them would be another car, a truck, some other large moving object would be a problem there. So just put it in your brain that this is what they're looking for. So they're not looking for you. So you have to ride your bike very, very defensively. And the studies that they did here, the researcher study found that 11 out of 19 drivers failed to gaze at an area of importance where cyclists or pedestrians would be located before turning. All attentional features were related to not making frequent over-the-shoulder checks for cyclists. There were more failures turning onto a major street due to parked vehicles blocking drivers' views of the bike lane. Attentional failures were more likely for those who drove more frequently in the downtown area. It appeared that drivers less familiar with the area were more cautious when turning. Sure, because you're unfamiliar with the streets, so you're going to be a little bit more on edge as far as, you know, I don't know where I am. Do I have to make this turn up here? Whatever. And so you can be looking a little bit more. So that makes a lot of sense. So the person who's more experienced with driving in an area that they're really familiar with is probably more dangerous to us than people that are, you know, from out of town and they're trying to figure out where they're going. So anyway, these results, they said, were quite surprising. They had not expected it, and it was it's very, very interesting. But the key here, the key point here, as I have pulled from this article and also from my own experience, is you really need to be looking all directions all the time and be uber aware of what's going on, which means your hearing and your sight have to be very, very key. That means that putting some sort of music device in your ear is probably not a great idea. If you are using a ride with GPS and you're using the earpiece to tell you where the turns are, I would say just one earpiece. Always leave the outside or the left side in the States here for those who are listening in the States. And I know we have people from all over the world that listen to the show. So on the States, you put your earpiece in your right ear and you leave your left ear open so you can hear traffic all around you, so you have a good idea what's going on. So that would be a big, big thing. But here's the really big one. It's called the importance of being predictable, okay? One of the biggest complaints which many cyclists deal with is the fact they do not behave in a predictable manner and thus are more likely to get hit. Treating your bike as a vehicle for the purposes of understanding the right-of-way is one way that you can make yourself predictable. When others sharing the road don't have to worry as much about you darting out in front of them, weaving around them, or generally being difficult to understand, it's easier to be harmonious. Being predictable means doing things like obeying traffic signals, using hand signals to show intent to turn, stop, or slow down, and yielding the right of way when required to pedestrians, other cyclists, and other drivers. The more predictable that cyclists are, the less chance of injury and crashes, and the more drivers will take cyclists seriously and be respectful. So I'm going to say the famous words from Bicycle Racing 101, hold your line.
Yes.
Okay, hold your line. Keep it straight. Keep it even. Don't weave back and forth. Don't wiggle around. Make sure that everybody understands where you're at. So that's it. That's what I got. That's all about the fact that nobody sees us. So get used to it. Nobody's going to see you for a long, long time. This isn't going to get cured overnight. It certainly is going to be better in the next 10 years, I would say, because I think we're going to get more and more people that are going to start using bicycle as an alternative means of transportation. You know, one of my New Year's resolutions that I gave last week when I gave mine, we're going to get to France here in a minute, is that I said I wanted to use my bicycle more for running errands around my local town and try to use the car a little bit less, use the bike a little bit more for doing things like going to grocery store. And also I can go to my local transfer station by pulling a trailer and putting my recyclables in there. So there's a lot of things that I could be doing, and I'm planning on emphasizing on that. That's one of my big resolutions this year. So anyway, that brings us to Happy New Year, Fran.
Oh,
so,
thanks.
You weren't here last week, so you didn't get to do the New Year's show.
Yeah.
But I would like to know if you have some bicycle New Year resolutions for us.
Sure. Well, thing is, I have a problem.
Yeah, you're not healthy right now.
No,
I know.
I know. So I have, unfortunately, some combination of migraine and dysautonomia. And dysautonomia means that when I get excited, I don't feel well. And so right now, when I get on my bicycle, when I'm doing cardio exercise, I have symptoms afterwards. Like I get like slight migraine symptoms. I get, and my migraine symptoms, thank goodness I don't get headaches, but I do get a lot of the other symptoms. So they're silent migraines.
Mm.
So I can get a bit of stomach upset. I can get swollen eyes and some pressure over my eyes and droopy eyes. And I feel a little lightheaded. And so my first goal is to figure out what the heck is going on and correct that.
That would be nice.
Because I can't.
See if I can actually put you on camera here. There you go.
I can't actually get on my bike right now because of the dysautonomia. And that's only, I was able to do it and manage it through last week. And then last week was the first time where I got on my bike for a very easy spin.
Mm-hmm.
I got off and I really didn't feel well.
Yeah.
So it's still going on, and I don't know if it's an inflammatory condition or a virus or some kind of infection. So I have to get through that. And once I get through that, then, I mean...
On to your list.
Yeah.
You got a New Year's resolution for me?
Well, the thing is, the big New Year's resolution is going to be about balance, because I have to figure out for this to not happen.
Right.
And, you know, getting on my bike is going to be about, you know, starting gently, seeing how long I can be on the bike and be healthy. You know, and that'll start with Zwift on the trainer. And, you know, when it's nice out, I'll be able to get outside. But I mean, in terms of increasing my fitness, if this wasn't going on, I would be social riding on Zwift, and I would be doing a couple of, training rides a week, and I'd be getting some miles in.
You'll get there.
But I'm not there right now. It's like this dysautonomia migraine thing has to be corrected before I can think about doing anything. So the big word for the year is going to be balance. It's going to be about balance and rest.
And get healthy.
Yeah,
hey,
much.
Dave Rusko is watching. Hey, it's Rusty. Rusty, hey, are you like, did you frame that national jersey? Mm-hmm. Nice stuff, man. Really cool. You've gotten a lot of shout outs over the last few weeks here. So that's a good thing. Nice to see you on here today. And also hello to Paul, who's watching right now, too. Very, very cool stuff. So anyway, we're going to move on to a few other things here. This one, did I miss this one? All right, I already got here. All right, this is more as to why drivers don't see cyclists. We're going to go back here. This one came out a while ago by our friend Celine Yeager through Bicycling Magazine. And, a study from the Australian National University asked 56 adults to examine a series of photographs depicting common roadway scenarios from a driver's point of view. Some of the photos were manipulated to either include a motorcycle or a taxi. Overall, the volunteers were more likely more than twice as likely to notice the appearance of a taxi as they were to spot a motorcycle. In fact, a full 65% indicated they didn't see the motorcycle at all. How about that? So this is a big deal. And I'm just going to keep emphasizing this because we as cyclists tend to get angry when we go out and we start playing with cars. And a lot of times we gesture the car, which is a bad move. We yell at the car, which is a bad move. We don't encourage this. Okay. We have to understand that they're just... There is a level of ignorance that happens when you're driving an automobile or a big truck, and you just, because of the fact that you don't have the education behind it to enlighten you to the point where you can do the right thing. So again, we mention this because I just want to make sure that we have less people getting hurt this year than we had last year. Last year was a bad year. It was a really bad year. 2020 was a bad year. And we've got a real problem here. We've got to up our game. Like, the drivers of motorized vehicles should certainly up their game. It's the law. It's what it is. But we can't depend on that. So we have to up our game as cyclists to become more aware and to become more involved in traffic safety. And it's got to start somewhere. And I know it's not always our fault. And I know that it seems ridiculous that we should have to do this. But I just want to hear about less injuries and fatalities, please, for 2022. It's a new year. Let's do some things here. One of the things that I like to see, and she mentions in this article, is daytime running lights. I'm big on it. Put a flashing light on the front of your bike that flashes white light, and it really does help. It really does help the drivers of automobiles and trucks see you better. And once I've got their attention, I am directly pointing at them. I'm actually looking them in the eye, so to speak, or into the windshield of your vehicle, and I'm pointing directly at them. It seems to work. It seems to work better, and you seem to be a lot safer that way. And a lot of times I get a friendly wave out of it. So it's definitely worth doing that. So we're all going to try to ride a little more attentive than we have in the past. I think that's a big thing. So I found this really, really cool article, and this was kind of a neat thing. And boy, if we could just start all doing this, this would be a great thing. Now I'm going to get out of all this unsightly stuff. So this actually comes from Streets Blog, one of my favorite websites for alternative transportation. And it is DC, Washington, DC, parking cash out law makes employers refund workers who don't drive. What a brilliant idea. All right, so you don't drive your car to work. You go to your employer and say, hey, I don't drive my car to work. And it's a first-of-kind municipal law that now requires many employees in Washington, D.C., employers in Washington, D.C., to provide cash to workers who turn down their company-sponsored parking benefits. So let's say you are working for ABC Company, and ABC Company says, I know you got to park in the garage and, it costs X amount of dollars a month, but because you work here, we're going to give you the parking benefit. We're going to give you a reward for parking so you can park for free, right? Or some sort of a discount. Well, now they have to give it to the person who doesn't use the car. How about that? How cool is that? So what if that parking fee is, I don't know what it costs. I've never been in a corporate situation where I've worked in a city where I've ever had to deal with parking. I do know what it costs to go into Hartford and park my car for a few hours. So I know that there's some expense involved. And even when we go to the University of Connecticut to do our radio show, I think we end up dropping about $5 whenever we go there. So, what if, because you rode your bike to work, I like this a lot. Because you rode your bike to work, or maybe you took the bus, or maybe you, you know, took the bus and walked, or whatever you did, that you weren't using the parking benefit any longer, and your employer, instead of giving you that benefit, would have to pay you cash for that. Let's say it's $100 a month. That's not a bad deal, huh? Yeah. So $100 a month, let's see, do this, and let's say you're fortunate enough to be hardy enough to be able to do it all year round, all right? That's $1,200. That's a bike. That's a bike. That's some serious repairs on your bike. That's new tires. That's new clothing. It's good stuff. This is a great idea. So I like this a lot, and this is what's going on in Washington, D.C., which is the, you know, the hub of our country, so to speak, politically, and the place where our new Transportation Secretary Buttigieg is, and this is a really good thing. Maybe this will pass on to other cities. I think it's really cool. So this is after a year struck in regulatory limbo, local leaders at the nation's capital are finally enforcing Transportation Benefits Equity Act of 2020, which requires that employers offer a clean air transportation fringe benefit in an amount equal to or more than market value of the parking benefit for employees who turn down company-provided space. I love this. This is great. So, you know, you may have that day that you have to drive your car to work. There is that problem. And so you're going to have to pay for parking that day. But you're going to be getting so much money back, you can afford to do that. So it's really cool. But every single day you ride your bike into work, you get money for it. This is a brilliant, brilliant idea. So anyway, the new requirements based on parking expert Donald Shoup's innovative parking cash out model, which studies have shown is an effective tool to de-incentivize car use. Free parking, of course, has long been proven to encourage vehicle commuting. Similar laws have passed at a statewide scale in California and Rhode Island, of all places. Good old Rhode Island, little roadie here. But neither applies to workplaces with fewer than 50 employees, and both offer generous exemptions for employers located in regions that already have good air quality, or that don't have strong transit networks that workers could realistically use instead of driving. And critically, the California law only pays workers the amount their employer saves by not having to provide them a parking space, not what the space is actually worth. That's a little bogus, which can mean a lot less money if the boss is getting a good deal on the contract with a private parking company. The DC law, by contrast, will apply to virtually every employee in the district with 20 or more employees, a category which includes a vast majority of workplaces, and will require them to pay out the full amount, a full market value of each spot, or follow other compliant paths aimed at decreasing regional driving mode share in other ways. It's a big deal, said Alan Greenberg, a DC-based parking reform advocate who wrote through a thorough analysis of the new law. In the age of concern about climate and overuse of our streets and the dangers of too many motor vehicles, it's absolutely insane that we provide incentives for people to drive more. That's great. So here you go. This, the 1997 study found that after employers offered the cash option, solo driving to work fell 17%. Carpooling increased 64%, transit ridership increased 50%, and walking or biking increased 39%. And that is from a Bloomberg article, and I think here it is right here. We move right on. The power of getting paid not to park at work. It's a beautiful thing. So this article, this came out, this was with Donald Shoup and Don Pickerel. It came out on July 14th of 2021. And it talks all about the income tax exemption for employer-paid parking subsidies, solo driving to work, which helps explain why 81% of American commuters drive to work alone. crazy. The tax exemption for employer-paid parking creates three big problems. First, free parking at work increases the number of cars driven to work by about a third, mostly at peak hours. Second, higher-income commuters are likely to get tax-exempt parking subsidies. Are more likely to get tax-exempt parking subsidies. The tax exemption is also worth nothing to the 44% of American households who pay no income tax because of their low incomes. Third, free parking doesn't help transit riders who are disproportionately commuters of color. In Los Angeles, for example, 92% of Metro riders are people of color. Repealing the tax exemption for popular fringe benefit is unlikely, but the discussion doesn't end there. In a bid to reduce driving and increase fairness, the District of Columbia enacted its Transportation Benefits Equity Amendment of 2020, which I just spoke about. If an employer with 20 or more employees subsidizes parking at work, the law requires an employer to offer an equal benefit to the employees who do not drive. It's called the parking cash out. It's a really, really just brilliant, brilliant idea. So this is a big deal. Where do you work? Do you ride your bike to work? Do you have a good relationship with HR? Can you talk to them about this and see what you can do to, you know, maybe get back that money that is being spent on and encouraged to people who are driving motorized vehicles? This is a no-brainer. I mean, I know even my son, he lives in Chicago. He doesn't drive his car to work. He doesn't have a car, so he doesn't even bother. He uses transit to get himself back and forth to work. I'm wondering if people that he would be working alongside are driving in and they're getting parking benefits, and whether or not he should be given part of that money back because he's being good about it and he's not clogging the streets. This just makes so much sense. I couldn't resist talking about it because this is something that I think we all need to pay attention to. If you are working and you are working in a place that has fairly large employment and a large parking lot, which you can see people jamming in and out of every day, this might be the time to make that approach. And what a great incentive. You know, I talk about it all the time. You know, you should ride your bike to work and, you know, ride your bike to work more, maybe even park your car part way and then ride in the rest of the way when the congestion just gets really bad, then ride through that on your bicycle and you don't have to get frustrated with being stuck in traffic and being part of the clogged roads. If you're in that traffic jam, you are part of the problem. That's all there is to it. If you are in that traffic jam and you are one person in a solo machine, then you're really part of the problem. And if you're in a carpool, you know, good for you. Great. You paid attention, you figured it out, and you're saving yourself some money and some frustration because everybody's taking hopefully taking their turns with the carpool. So that's a really good thing. But being offered parking cash is instead of a parking space or free parking is just such a brilliant, brilliant measure. I love it. I love it a lot. It's great. And then if you've ever worked in one of those places, and I've had conversations with my friends who work at, well, we have a very, very large employer in East Hartford called Pratt & Whitney Aircraft, and they're big, and they have an enormous parking lot. And my friends talk about, and I grew up down in southeastern Connecticut, and Electric Boat Shipyard is down there. And when the bell goes off at the end of the day, people are literally running to their cars to get in their cars to try to get out of the parking lot as quickly as they can because the congestion, you know, to leave the parking lot is ridiculous. It's similar to when I go to a basketball game up at the university. I never park in the parking garage. That's crazy. It takes me an hour to get out of there. So I would never use the parking garage. I park way down South Campus. I walk a mile and then I go to a game. And then when I get done, by the time I've gotten back to my car, the people that were in the garage, they're still in the garage. They still haven't gotten out and I'm on my way home. So, you know, there's just, we are an interesting species by the way we behave. So I'll just leave it at that. But anyway, that's what we got. That's what it is. I love this idea. I would love to see more of this idea. I think it would be a great thing. There's just so much good about it. Try to get your employer to pay for you because you decided not to drive your car to work. Beautiful. Lovely, lovely, lovely. So anyway, there's a lot of power there. There's a whole lot of power there. Moving on to the bicycle industry. We got some industry. We got a lot of industry things going on here right now. And so I find that to be really interesting. I had been putting this one off for a long time, and it was an op-ed that was in Bicycle Retailer magazine about five things that might happen in 2022 or not, and I will get to that in just a moment. But most recently, Trek has bought out yet another 7-bike chain of stores, and they bought out Baltimore's Race Pace Bicycles. So Trek now has 7 more company stores. Hang on tight. They're not done yet, and this is going to continue to happen. So I understand that people love their Trek bicycles and they love their local retailers and all, but support your local retailer, support your small retailer, please. And remember, the big guys are starting to play hardball out there, and it's only going to get worse. And that is because there's a new player on the block now. So it's no longer just Trek and Specialized and then sometimes Giant. But it is now turned into Cannondale will now be on that list too, because Durell has completed, this is the other thing that's on my list of latest things that just happened, they have completed their sale of Durell Sports to Pond Holdings. Pond Holdings is now the largest player in the bicycle industry. They own a lot of brands of bikes. They have a lot of power, a lot of control. They have control over the factories. They've got a lot going on, and it's only a matter of time before we start seeing maybe a company store things happening there. I know that Cannondale tried to do the company store in downtown Boston and failed at it. It did not work, but Boston is a different animal, and the Northeast is very, very different than other parts of the country. And so even the giant corporation Walmart had a lot of difficulty establishing real estate here in New England. So we're just a little bit more set in our ways here, I guess, and a little more difficult to deal with. We don't like to see that change a whole lot. So anyway, Durell has completed that sale of Durell Sports to Pond Holdings. So that's going to be a big financial player in the industry. How long is it before I'll keep in touch with my local retailer here, Aaron, and find out how long it is before they come knocking on his door and saying, okay, it's all us or nothing. Or, you know, we don't know. We don't know what they're going to do. I know Trek has been a little bit on the bully side on this. Specialized has followed suit. So they're both making it more difficult to buy outside of their scheme of things. And dealers are, you know, how do I put this nicely? I can't. Dealers are falling for it. You know, they're not standing the ground. And so therefore they are getting bullied around. Now, I don't know what happened in the Race Pace Bicycle deal, which is down in the Baltimore area. Oftentimes it may not be in this case, but oftentimes what I have seen is that companies, especially Trek, will see a dealer that is having financial struggle, and that's where they step in and start supplying a lot more product to that dealer and extending to the point where they end up having to sell their bicycle shop over to them. It's not a great business practice, but it's one that's working for them. And I know a few cases around that that has happened in my general area here. So it's just, it's not what I would call the best business plan or technique. But then again, you know, it's business. It's corporate. They don't care. Here's a big one. Wayne Stetna. For all of you guys, like, well, Rusty's listening, so he would know who Wayne Stetna is. We have to go all the way back to our early years of bicycle racing. Wayne and his brother were both big bike racers back in the day, and he has been with, since his bicycle racing career ended, he's been with Shimano. He's been there for 37 years, and after 37 years, he has left Shimano, and he's joined SRAM. Very interesting. So we'll see what that does, where it's going. I have no idea. But anyway, that's what's going on in general in the bicycle industry. But we're going to go right here, and we're going to talk a little bit more about, this is from Rick Vosper, who writes a lot for Bicycle Retailer magazine. And this came out actually back in December of last year. And he talked about the five things that might happen in 2022 or not. Number one, channel-wide overstock. What goes up must come down. Nowhere is this more true with respect for demand of bicycles. And if demand drops off while the whole channel is stuffed with to the gunwales with product and booked out for more than a year, the results may be disastrous. I'm watching this very, very carefully, because you think about this. Okay, nobody's got product right now. It's a disaster. If you want product, you pre-order product. You pre-order product with a commitment that you are going to buy that product, and then, you know, you will get it as they release it to you. But it's not always consistent, so you've got this problem. So there was like nearly a decade of oversupply in the industry. Now it's undersupply. Now it's, they're building on demand is basically what they're doing. And you don't even have a solid feel as to what is going to come in your next shipment. You may not get everything you ordered. You may get mystery parts to your order. I've heard all sorts of interesting stories from retailers. So the suppliers are kind of, they're stuck because, you know, they're just waiting for production. And the people who are producing are just, they're selling everything they can make. It's really kind of a great place to be if we could just get more product out the door on the retail level. So suppliers say their forecasting abilities have been improved, allowing them to be more agile in response to changes in demand, but that ability has yet to get the pressure test. And a sudden drop in demand would put huge amounts of pressure on the system virtually overnight. Likelihood of this happening? 50%. Number two, the battle for company-owned stores heats up. Well, we just talked about that, didn't we? Yeah, the company-owned store thing is a thing. Trek's ongoing program of buying up key dealers in major markets will doubtlessly continue unabated. But what happens now that Specialized and, before the end of the quarter of 2022, Ponderel enter into the fray? It's an all-out bidding war for the best available dealers in the hottest markets. That's what's going on. So it's good news for retailers. That is competition for a few key shops. It could raise the resale value of all the shops in the area as a rising tide lifts all the boats. But there's literally never has been a better time to sell. The downside is that, like Nike, the big bike brands may decide they need a lot fewer dealers in a given market once they have some of their own skin in the game. Likelihood of this actually happening? 85%. Recreation and advocacy, they go mainstream. But what if the demand continues to go strong instead of petering out, as predicted in item number one here that we just talked about? And the 2021 demand blip turns into a genuine no-holds-barred bike boom. According to the MBDA study, National Bicycle Dealers Association Bicycle Study of 2021, fully half of today's cyclists either entered the sport in the last 2 years or returned to it after a layoff. That's an amazing statistic. That means a lot of ongoing inrush to cyclists, and assuming it doesn't fade, it likely likewise means a fat bump in demand for low to middle price bikes, which means that savvy bike companies would do well to gear their production and marketing to capture many of these new and returning riders as possible. Enthusiasts will continue as they always have, but big money is to be gained in the mainstream market, and the companies that reach out to it will reap the benefits. So, likelihood of all of this happening, 50%. Number four, e-bike shortages. Yeah, here it is. This is a big one right here. I think the e-bike is... it's going to be the highest demand bicycle on the market, personally, in within the next 2 years. The increase of pushing our automakers to making electric vehicles, and the increase in the technology of the battery technology that's coming out, and the fact that if you just sit down and do the math and see how far away you are from practical work and commuting and running errands, the e-bike makes a whole lot more sense than dropping 40 grand into a car. Think about it. It's the e-bike is, even if you, and also there's a tax credit for the e-bike now. So there's a lot of things going on here. I think the e-bike is going to be a big deal. And I think shortages on the e-bike are certainly going to be up there. The likelihood of this happening, according to this article, 35%. I think it's going to be a lot higher than that. But that's just my prediction. We'll see what happens in a year. I'm sure there'll be a follow-up on this. And I do have another follow-up on it, which I might not be able to get to until next week, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. The great resignation and price expansion. No secret that the industry is currently undergoing a labor shortage, but couple that with potentially increasing demand in product and service sectors, and it adds up to a looming labor crisis. Yeah, trying to get people that will work. And this is especially true for more skilled positions like managers and mechanics. I hear this a lot from my dealers that have stayed in the business for a long time. It's really hard to find a good mechanic. It's really getting more and more difficult. It's a skill, and it's the bike business. So there's not always the big monetary bonus of being a skilled bike mechanic that will, you know, it's going to make you a ton of money, not like it would be if you were an automobile mechanic where they're going to pay you a lot more money, or essentially being a plumber or an electrician, which you're going to get paid a lot more money, and yet you're still going to have those skills to be able to do that sort of thing. So that is definitely an issue. And those are the issues that were brought up about things that might happen and change in 2022. So Rick has another article which just came out, and it was, and I will get to it next week and talk about it. But the it's called The Sound of One Bubble Popping, and it addresses some of what he talked about here. So we'll talk about it a little bit more next week, and I'll give you an idea about what's going on there. There's other things that are going on out there. This last week has been the week of national cyclocross championships all over Europe. And good old Wout van Aert is the 2022 Belgian cyclocross champion. Surprise, surprise. Who would have guessed different? And so anyway, he rode his last cross of the season in Middelkerk, and took his fifth Belgian championship win, five times. And this man is, 25 or under now? He's still a pretty young man. So anyway, Wout's got it going on. And Marianne Vos, which, you know, we've been watching her for a long time. She's the new Dutch champion. Tough race again, because she's always racing Lucinda Brand, who's also a top level woman cyclist, cyclocross racer, pro racer. So anyway, those are the two that stood out. There's some other stuff out there too, but anyway, just that's what's going on in cyclocross. If you're not watching cross racing right now, there's just such great cross racing on. If you can find an outlet that you can watch it on, it's all available online. I'll even watch it in a language I don't understand, because it's just so much fun to watch, because there's just a lot going on. Another thing, I was hanging out on the GCN website the other day, or the YouTube channel. Actually, it was this morning, and there's a great little clip of Jeremy Powers instructing one of the other riders as to how to ride on a world-class cyclocross race course. And it's pretty funny, and it's definitely worth checking out. So I would look at that. I think I posted it on the Bicycle Talk website or the Facebook page, so you can check it out there. But it's very entertaining, because you get this person who obviously was a solid winner of races on the road, and Jeremy takes him off road, and the game changes entirely, because not everybody can just hop on a bike and be really fit and figure it all out. And it started all the way from the very beginning, where this gentleman showed up with 90 pounds of pressure in his tires. Oops, bad move. Anyway, it's fun, it's comical, it's entertaining, and definitely worth watching. So I would check it out. I got a few things posted up there. There's also someone sent over this Simpsons post of Simpsons of people going in. They're going into a biker bar, and it was all bicyclists. It was all cyclists. It's a funny little clip. It's on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. Definitely worth a look and a chuckle. It's good stuff. Coming up events, we've got the Taipei Show in 2022. It's still on. It's going hybrid also, so that's going to be a big deal. The Handmade Bike Show is returning in September of 2022 in Denver. We like those guys. They were on our show a few years ago when they were in Hartford. A lot of fun. And Belltown Cross, of course, is the first one to have its cyclocross race posted in the New England calendar. You guys are early. You guys are really early. But anyway, finishing points. Happy New Year again. It's 2022. What's your bike plan for 2022? We heard Franz today. Remember, if you're out playing in traffic and they just do not see you, how about approaching your employer to help you pay for driving your bike, for not driving your car to work, and for riding your bike to work? I like that idea. Lots of rumbling in the industry, and world-class cyclocross continues. I'll say it again, and this will not be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and the price of gas and lack of places to safely ride, and join the revolution of change. Remember, when you're presenting yourself to your local government, come up with solutions, not complaints or problems. Positive beats negative every time. Please support your local bike shop. Bicycle Talk I don't know what that is. I don't know why that was put into my list here. Respect one another. It's 2021. Initiate, participate, ride your bike, and tell everyone you know. It really could save your life. Save mine. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Franz Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or on a podcast, and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. If you'd like to contribute information, drop me an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and whus.org. Thank you for listening.